Welcome to another episode of Telemetry Now. Now, today's episode is going to be a little bit different. Yes, we're talking about tech, but we're talking about careers, and specifically pre-sales engineering. Joining me today is Sean McGinley, a pre-sales engineer at Kentik, to talk about the different titles that people use for pre-sales engineering, what the role entails, what the career path looks like. So I'm really excited about this episode because it has a very special place in my heart. I was a pre-sales engineer for some years and absolutely loved it. So I'm looking forward to today's show. My name is Philip Gervasi, and this is Telemetry Now. Hey, Sean, thanks so much for joining today. It really is great to have you. I love having folks from Kentik on. You're relatively new to Kentik, so I do want to talk about that. But also, I love your background. There's so many parallels to my own history as an engineer and then in pre-sales. So really looking forward to digging in. But before we do, before we hit the old record button today, you made a comment that you play golf, but you're not a golfer. Maybe you can explain a little bit about what you mean by that.
Well, I look like I just started, and my play looks like everything about the game, I've just not gotten better over a 20-year span that I've played this game. I have not gotten better, but I do enjoy being out there and swinging the clubs, being with friends. It's, that part is wonderful, but, so I can't call myself a golfer. I'm still shooting over 100. It is what it is. And, I've taken lessons. YouTube has destroyed the game in the sense that, there's so many people with tips.
Oh, yeah.
And that, you're changing constantly, and that's never a good idea.
Oh, you don't develop that consistency and that technique. Yeah, I get it. Sometimes I wonder, I can figure routers, but I'm not an engineer. Something like that.
I'm with you.
So, and Sean, you're also on the East Coast. I'm in New York and you're down in the Virginia area, specifically in Richmond. Is that right?
Just east of Richmond in Providence Forge. I'm right in between Richmond and Williamsburg.
Excellent. Beautiful area. I love it.
Oh, it is.
I'd like to dive in now, into your background, and you could share whatever you like, of course. I mean, you're our guest today, so as much personal and professional that you'd like to share that gives some color and context to what we're going to talk about today, which is, what it is to be in pre-sales, what pre-sales engineering is all about. Mm-hmm. Certainly got to define some of those terms, that's for sure.
Sure. But
tell us a little bit about your background, how you got into the role here at Kentik, specifically in pre-sales.
Sure. So I started out as a hands-on network engineer, working those late-night cutovers, troubleshooting circuits, building data centers. Over time, I realized that I liked the conversations that happened before the technology was deployed. So, and then, of course, helping customers figure out what they needed and how it could make their operations better. That really led me into the pre-sales role. And I got here. I was doing an audit for one of our larger customers, and I met my current account rep as well as the customer support rep, and started using the product and became a big fan.
Okay, so you were a trad engineer, if you will, right? Traditional network engineer turning a virtual and physical wrench. Mm-hmm. And then you got the pre-sales bug, right?
I
totally track with that because that's exactly what I did. I was a VAR engineer for many years and loved it. And then got into pre-sales. For me, it was a little bit more, number one, I didn't want to do midnight cutovers anymore on Friday.
Yeah.
So that was getting old. Mm-hmm. I was in my early mid-30s at that point. And then also, I liked the idea of the variable comp. That was good.
Yep.
At least a portion of your income being variable. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I also really liked being customer-facing. Now, I mean, you're customer-facing when you're an engineer anyway, working for VARs, because I'm working directly with the customer on building the thing. Not always. A lot of the time it's the middle of the night and the customer is home snoozing and I'm doing the work by myself. But certainly there's a customer-facing element, but not like pre-sales, where you're walking through week after week after month, especially on big projects where it takes a long time to build the architecture and the bill of materials, things like that. So, yeah, definitely I got the bug for it as well. So now you're in pre-sales at Kentik, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I got to ask, though, like, what does that mean? And I don't mean necessarily at Kentik. I just mean, in your mind, this term pre-sales.
Yeah.
We're using the term sales, which many an engineer have an aversion to. So let's put that out there. So is pre-sales engineering a type of engineering? How does it relate to sales specifically? Sure. Is it part of the sales team? Like, where does it fit?
So pre-sales is the technical side of the sales process. So it's where technology meets business. So we help customers understand what a solution can do and how it fits their environment and whether it actually solves their problem. It's less about closing a deal and more about building trust and a technical roadmap to success, I think.
Yeah, and which takes time, right?
It does.
And building that relationship, like you said, something that I enjoy. But for me, I think that one of the ways that you're successful doing that, building that trust, building that relationship, and then ultimately building the technical architecture, right? It does require a lot of experience as a traditional engineer, if you will, right?
It does. And, you know, when I worked at the law firms, you know, the lawyers, they were my customers, right? Mm-hmm. They were a tough crowd. But, you know, you're also part of part translator, you know, and part problem solver and part strategist. So, you know, the idea is we take those complex technical ideas, explain them in clear business terms. And I was always pretty good at that. We do the demos. We design proof of concepts. Mm-hmm. We guide customers through technical validation. The goal is just to make sure the customer gets a solution that truly works for them and not just one that looks good on paper.
Yeah, that's a good point. Not one that just looks good on paper, because I do remember working with the account managers, the salespeople, right? The mm-hmm. pure sales. They got the meetings. They did all that. Often it was like their kid was on the same basketball team as the customer's kid, you know, that kind of thing.
Sure.
And we're in the meeting, and I'm already sort of level setting, sort of, you know, the account manager is like promising something that breaks the laws of physics. And I'm like, no, we can't quite do that. But let's talk about what your needs are or what your problem is that you're trying to solve, and then let's build a solution around it. So, so I really felt exactly. like though being part of the sales motion, you know, that's something, I still got to be an engineer.
Right.
I wasn't necessarily standing at a crash cart in a data center. I get it. But you still got to be an engineer very much. A problem solver, like you said. And I really enjoyed that a lot.
Me too.
I say this to my boss here at Kentik, and maybe I shouldn't, but, you know, when I was in pre-sales, that was my favorite job. I love what I do for Kentik, don't get me wrong, but I really enjoyed being in pre-sales because it really scratched that itch of being an engineer and being customer-facing and being a problem solver and building something all at the same time.
Agreed.
So let's talk about the titles. Mm-hmm. Is there, because at Kentik, what is your official title?
Solutions engineer.
Solutions engineer. Mm-hmm. So you're engineering a solution, got it. I was a solutions architect.
Oh, okay.
Do you have an understanding what the difference is between these terms?
Yeah, they overlap, right? But there is a subtle difference where my job is typically, you know, customer facing during the sales cycle. So it's more involved in the demos, the presentations, the proof of concepts, where a solutions architect tends to focus more on design depth and post-sales handoff. I think in some companies, the titles are really interchangeable.
Yeah.
In others, the architect goes deeper into the implementation, but both are the same, both share the same DNA, I guess, translating needs into solutions.
Yeah, and both in the pre-sales organization, whether that's part of sales, you know, more broadly or not, but definitely part of the pre-sales organization. Yeah, I found that depending on the company, they would define the terms differently, but very, very, that therefore what I'm about to say, very, very loosely, right? Mm-hmm. So solutions engineering or pre-sales engineering, I found to be walking the customer through those things, like you said, maybe a POC, maybe some demos to show how a solution works, right? So probably very akin to what you're doing here at Kentik, you know, walking through, like, here are the problems that we can solve with the Kentik platform. Mm-hmm. Here are the bells and whistles and the features, but also, like, these are the different components that you need to be aware of. Let me show you how it works.
Right.
When I was a solutions architect, I didn't really do that. So let's say I was showing a customer, like, talking to a customer about a WAN refresh. Mm-hmm. And we would go into an eyeball deep technical conversation about SD-WAN and say, you know, this is, at the time it was like something new and they needed help understanding what that technology was,
right.
Maybe getting a lay of the land of the different SD-WAN vendors.
Yeah.
And then of course what their specific requirements were, technical requirements and business requirements, like what latency requirements they had for their like MRI scans over the public internet, you know, things like that.
Sure.
And like, okay, that'll help us determine what kind of an architecture, what kind of backhaul, mm-hmm. talking about their security requirements. But I never got into like, then let's go into, you know, the platform and start clicking around and let me show you how it works. Never did that. Never
right.
did that.
Gotcha.
And so I've always seen that as the distinction between a solutions engineer and a solutions architect. But I do agree with you. Like you said, there's a ton of overlap. Really depends on, you know, the terminology and the nomenclature used at the particular company, right? Yeah. But both yeah. pre-sales, for sure.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, yeah. So what are the main goals then? Is it to just, I'll tell you, I know it depends on the account manager you're working with.
Yeah.
But in your mind, what are the main goals of a pre-sales person?
So salespeople focus on why the customer should buy, business value, pricing, and contracts, where I hope they don't get mad at me for saying that, but the pre-sales focuses on how it works and why it will succeed technically.
Yeah.
Salesperson's going to close the deal. The pre-sales engineer ensures it's the right deal. Mm-hmm. And together we create that long-term customer relationship. You know, it's not a one-time transaction. So, I think that's really how we're different. But sometimes you're paired with somebody that's, you know, like here at Kentik, I have a fabulous account rep who knows the product very well, and what a difference that makes. So we work very well together.
Yeah, I've found that sales folks that used to be engineers, that's great. It really helps a lot.
Yeah,
it helps disarm certain things, but certainly I do agree with you that this idea of pre-sales in our realm of technology is really, I believe, the driving force behind closing new business, about mm-hmm. developing those long-term relationships with customers. Mm-hmm. Whether you're a vendor like Kentik or you're like yeah. with a VAR, I was with VARs, so the relationships were mostly built on professional services since we weren't selling. I mean, we were adding a little margin on hardware from Cisco and Juniper and
sure.
et cetera, but certainly our main business was professional services. But where's the value? What is the value? And the value was in the skill of designing the thing, the
yeah.
skill of understanding the nuance of the technologies and the gotchas, you know, from having turned those physical and virtual wrenches. I understood some of those gotchas of, you know, these boxes do really well in an HA, but not in an active-active, so let's look at Brilliant. A different type of licensing model. And they're like, how did you know that? I'm like, I knew that because I got burnt in the middle of the night, my man.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. And that's happened to me. I remember working with a customer just north of New York City, and it was a data center thing. We were looking at, you know, different firewall solutions for their data center. And the deployment ended up going a particular direction because of those kinds of experiences that I had. But I agree with you. It, you know, that's where the relationship with the customer comes. That's where the credibility and the trust comes from. So I really,
sure.
I really, really appreciate what you do in pre-sales and the concept of pre-sales for that reason. I mean, you know, again, working with great account reps
yeah.
that are able to find opportunities, because,
oh, yeah.
you know, that's kind of what makes business world work, you know, finding new opportunities and closing new business. And also great project managers that can coordinate all the craziness of a big implementation and protect engineers from angry customers. That's always nice, that buffer.
Yeah.
But it's the pre-sales folks that drive that and that develop that relationship. You know, I really believe
yeah.
like what you do, Sean, is why customers come back over and over. Obviously the product has to be good, right?
You.
The product
sure.
has to work. So.
Sure. Well, you know what? That's what makes my job easy is, you know, when you believe in a product, it's easy to sell it and show its value.
Yeah.
And back to another point you made, you know, the customers often said to me, you know, how did you know that? Or where'd you get that? And it's like, you know, I tell them, you know, I never learned anything from being right. So I've gotten burned. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Something like that's always happened to, and you never forget it.
You don't. I know. It becomes etched in your memory forever. Those are the hardest lessons, but some of the best lessons.
Agreed.
Yeah. Yeah. So then how does pre-sales compare to like pure sales? Because you're still quote unquote selling, and you talked about the engineering component, but so how would you say they compare and they're different then? Because you're not outright engineering the solution. You're not outright in the data center. You're not in, you know, standing at the rack.
You know, so a lot of times I 99% of my current customer base, they have change control windows. And more times than not, I'm offering to be there with them.
Really?
Oh, yeah, sure. I like rolling up my sleeves, getting my hands dirty. The account rep, not so much. You know, if they can bring something, they'll be there. They'll join you. But, you know, I'm there with the engineers rolling up my sleeves, you know, doing the technical things that need to get done. But at the same time, the account rep's doing things that, I don't really wouldn't enjoy doing. Cold calls and things of that nature, and getting me to a place where I can walk in and just start talking technical and showing value. So that's I guess the big difference. But both are as important as the other.
Sure. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. You would have no one to talk to if the account reps weren't out there finding those opportunities. And I work with some folks that are naturally inclined to that, and it's amazing to see them like in a group. Like when we're at an event or something and you have a natural salesperson.
Oh yeah.
And they are like they can like look at the landscape of people at the event and they just see like the opportunities kind of like
they do,
you know, emerging from the crowd. And then they go and they talk and they develop that relationship and they find the right word. You know, a lot of folks say that I must be good in sales because I can, you know, I have the gift of gab in a sense.
You do.
Yeah, well, I'm not good at sales.
Really?
I've been on calls where, as a pre-sales engineer, I'm talking to folks and it's an initial phone call, but the AM wanted to have, you know, a technical person on the call. So we're on the call and we're talking about the technology. And as we near the end of the call, at the end of the scheduled meeting, I'm like, all right, well, you know, I hope this was helpful for you. We'll talk to you soon. And the salesperson jumps in like, well, hey, hang on a second. Let's talk about your budget for next quarter. What are the next steps? How would you like us to come back? And what I'd like to do is put a proposal in front of you. Perhaps we'll leave the pricing off of it so we can see if we're on track. And I'm like, oh yeah, I never thought of any of that stuff.
No kidding. You
know, yeah, I'm thinking of speeds and feeds. Like, so my mind, you know, it doesn't quite work that way.
No, I'm with you.
Yeah, which probably is why I love pre-sales, because I get to be the engineer and nerd and stay close to the tech and talk, but not necessarily in a sales capacity. So.
Right. It's nice to sit back and just watch them do their thing at times.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, something
because they're thinking in a completely different, they have a different strategy than what I'm thinking. I'm thinking, you know, technical, sell it technical and, show them what it can do and how it can help them. But they're coming up with all these, you know, different scenarios where the play is legit. So,
yeah. And I love what you said about like a primary job is to show the value of the product.
Oh yeah.
You know, whether again, you're at a vendor, or you're with a VAR or you're, you know, whatever it happens to be, you're showing the value of the thing that, you know, ultimately you're trying to sell, whether it's an overall solution, some kind of an architected solution or a specific product. But, you know, for me, and I have some thoughts around this as well, but I want to hear yours. How do you balance the way that you're incentivized? Because, especially with VARs, there was margin on hardware. So there was, you know, an implied or an inherent incentivization to sell more boxes.
Yeah.
Which may be necessary, but maybe not. But you also want to make your number that quarter.
Yeah,
and you have all that, and pro services. Maybe is it really that many hours for this when you scope the project, or maybe? I mean, of course, a project manager is always going to add yet another 20% no matter what. So I never felt bad about that. But how do you balance that, you personally?
You know, that's a great question, and for me, it always comes down to integrity. Mm. If you recommend something that doesn't fit, it may help your quarterly number, but it's going to hurt your credibility really forever. So my personal thought on this is the best pre-sales engineers see compensation as a reflection of helping the customer win. So when they succeed, when their network runs smoother, or their observability improves, the business grows, and so do we. So it's a long game mindset for me.
Yeah, it isn't transactional, and how much gear can I shove into this statement of work or into this proposal? It's more, what is the right solution? Because I know, number one, that's going to make the customer happy. Mm-hmm. And from a sales perspective, they'll probably want to stick with us.
Agreed, 100%.
With me, even, as a solutions engineer. That's something that I've noticed. I've had customers reach out to me via DM on LinkedIn or whatever other social media and say, hey, you're with so-and-so now? Can you hook me up with your sales rep? So, I'd like to continue working with you.
Yeah.
So, I think it's a great way to keep customers sticky, because they're happy because you did the right thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the money does follow. I mean, we are in a for-profit business.
Sure.
So that is a thing. We do the right thing because of integrity, like you said, but certainly, the money is going to follow because you did.
It will.
Yeah, absolutely.
Agreed.
So then, explain to me, you told me a little bit about your own career path, but let's say that somebody, and I've seen some other blog posts and heard some podcasts about, pre-sales. So I want to hear from you. What is a typical career path, or what do you think could be what would you recommend as a career path for somebody that wants to get into this as their job?
So I think most pre-sales, it seems, comes from hands-on engineering roles, right? Okay. You got network engineers, sysadmins, cloud architects, security specialists, and the next step is learning to communicate, which you do all the time. If you're like working for a company and you're their network admin, you're pitching all the time, for budget, for product that's needed. So, I guess when you know that you have the communication aspect down, turning technical ideas into selling it to non-technical people. That's the big leap, right? Moving from doing the work to explaining the work. And many companies, also hire support engineers or consultants who are ready to move into a more customer-facing role. And I think you also have to be a musician. No, I'm kidding. It seems like everybody in this field at one point was a musician, but I think it's relates to that creating aspect as well and enjoying that. I got into it, I had 10 years of being a network administrator for a school system in the law firms. Mm-hmm. And the pitching came easy because I had been doing it for so long, didn't even realize it.
Right. What kind of musician are you?
I was, those days are gone, but I played hard rock, big Led Zeppelin fan, of course.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Yeah.
And what is your instrument?
Guitar.
You're a guitarist?
Yeah. We're a dime a dozen. Everybody plays guitar.
Yeah. So I guess I shouldn't tell you that I have 6 guitars to my left right off camera.
You're kidding me.
Most of which I never pick up anymore. My wife always tells me I need to start playing more and everything. And I was on Facebook Marketplace just the other day looking for a new half stack, but it's hard for me to pull the trigger on that stuff because I'm cheap.
Well, I still do it. I got Ableton. I bought the Scarlett piece to interface with the computer, and that now I can write and just live in my own little world and create music, right? Yep. But what's your preferred guitar?
Preferred is tough because it really depends on my mood. Like, what's your favorite band? What's your favorite song? I like so many genres. This morning I was listening to Dream Theater. I love progressive metal.
Oh, yeah.
Yesterday I was listening to Billy Joel. Very, very different. But, it depends. My new favorite band is called Porcupine Tree, if you've heard of them. They are a progressive rock band that is less metal than Dream Theater, but still very technically advanced and creative in their sound. I grew up in the grunge days. I was in high school in the early 90s, so I have a very special place in my heart for Pearl Jam, Nirvana, Stone Temple Pilots, Alice in Chains.
Absolutely.
And all those, Soundgarden.
Oh, yeah, me too.
Yeah, yeah. And you know what's funny is Going back into pre-sales, I agree with you. That's one of the things that I really, really love about pre-sales is being creative. Working with customers and not just knowing syntax, but working with customers to design an overall solution. Like, okay, what is the real problem here that we're facing? Sometimes it's the customer doesn't even know, you know, and you're... Right. You know, they're like, well, we're in for a hardware refresh and, you know, we have E-rate money or something like that. So we want to replace all our closet switches. And you're like, okay, all right, well, I can do an order. That's fine. But what's going on your network? And all of a sudden you start discovering like what some, you know, core issues are in their operations that you can resolve as part of a refresh, you know, and really help that customer. And we're making margin on boxes, so that doesn't hurt too. But it's interesting that you brought that up about being creative, because I really see pre-sales as very much that.
Me too.
I guess traditional engineering is too, because you are, you know, figuring out like what is the appropriate... Well, you know what I'm trying to say. Like you're trying to figure out the specific answer to a technical problem. You're how do I run this fiber through this ladder rack? You know, so there's an element of creativity there for sure.
There really is. There really is.
So you believe that you know, to get into pre-sales, you really should have a foundation of engineering, hands-on engineering experience.
It definitely helps. Yeah. When customers, I think when customers sense that you've been in their shoes, which I have, you know, troubleshooting outages or managing production systems, you earn instant credibility, but the key is balance. Enough technical depth to understand the problem and enough empathy and communication skill to connect with the person across the table. But you got to have the hands-on experience to some degree. It helps make the job easier, but I've always had a passion for learning. So I'll dive in on anything, but I think it definitely helps.
Yeah. Would you consider getting into pre-sales almost a promotion then? From tradition?
Yeah. I kind of do, you know, because it takes everything that I enjoyed, being, you know, a network engineer and kind of took away some of the hours, the long hours that I would have and those change controls, you know, in the middle of the week or in the weekends. But I enjoyed doing that as well. I just realized that this is something I would enjoy more.
Yeah, I think I agree. That's a tough one, and I didn't think of that question until just now. So I don't have a good answer for even myself. But my off the cuff answer to you, Sean, is that I think it is a promotion in a lot of ways. Yeah. In the VAR world, I think it is. I mean, you make a great living as a good high level engineer, sure.
Right.
But when you get into pre-sales, one, you have better hours, like you just said. Two, if you're good at pre-sales and you get hooked up with a good salesperson or team of salespeople that get great opportunities and you're good in pre-sales, it could be much more lucrative as well.
Agreed.
So it's a promotion in that sense. And you get to do... You know, one thing that I will say is when you're part of the sales organization, you get to expense a lot more stuff.
Yeah.
When I was an engineer, I expensed almost nothing, and I'm going to customer sites, and the project manager is like, why did you do this thing? Why did you get a steak? I'm like, I didn't expense any food that day except for that dinner, so leave me alone.
Yeah.
But when you're in sales, pre-sales, part of the sales organization, it's like you're encouraged to take customers out all the time. If you're at a meeting, well, let me take you out to lunch after we're done, you know? Yeah, I mean, it really is about that relationship building too. So, you know, those soft skills when you chit-chat over lunch and things like that are really important. But you did say something I want to go back to. Very, very important, I think.
Yeah.
And a big struggle for me. It still is a big struggle for me being in technical marketing because I'm not really hands-on anymore.
Right.
How do you stay as a pre-sales engineer, whatever your title happens to be, mm-hmm. how do you stay current on those latest technologies that are... Like, that's exactly why you're in that meeting, is to present, you're not in there talking about spanning tree and cat OS. You're talking about, the latest stuff.
Sure.
Because that's what, you know, the customer is looking for. How do you stay up on that?
Yeah, you know, it's constant learning is just part of the job. You know, I spend time every week reading release notes, lab testing new products, which, by the way, you know, as a pre-sales engineer, I finally have the lab that I dreamed of.
Oh, really?
I can expense things, right? um, But, you know, talking with peers, I also learned directly from the customers. Some of the most advanced environments in the world are at our customers' sites. So you quickly realize staying current isn't just about the tech skills. It's about understanding where the industry is heading so you can help your customers get there first. So you got to stay on top of things. You know, you've got to stay. But, I mean, this job does that for you. Every time, you know, it's like... Every customer is a new job, a new project. They all do things differently, it seems. So, you know, that's the exciting part about it. But, yeah, just day-to-day activities will keep you current.
Yeah, yeah. I agree with you on the lab part. I had a lab at in my basement when I was a VAR engineer, like in the field. And I would have a lab where I would, to an extent, build out the solution that I was working on, you know, not designing necessarily, but that I got handed by the pre-sales engineer, right? And as much as I could, whether it was at the time in like GNS3, then we had things like Viral. Now I use Container Lab a lot, you know, whatever it happens to be. And well, at one point I had a lot of hardware, like a couple of racks, full height racks, which was a big pain in the neck.
Sure.
And so I would do that. And then when I got into pre-sales, I realized I still need to do that. And so I would like design a big ICE project, Cisco ICE, right?
Okay.
And like, how do I deploy .1x on this platform for these, you know, these interfaces on this particular OS and. How does that policy get pushed out properly over the air for wireless, things like that. So I would practice, but I would run through the configurations. I would do all that. I would get as much as I could from the customer's network information, replicate it to an extent at home, and I would do that. And I would clock those hours, you know, for the project.
Sure.
I would do that. And then when I went to go deploy the thing, some of it was even copy-paste.
Yeah,
because I just did it at home over the weekend or the week prior.
Nice.
But a lot of it was, you know, I understood the nuance and like, okay, I got to make sure this policy is tied over here to their Active Directory. And this, do people still use Active Directory? I don't even know.
And you know what? I cut my teeth on Novell.
So you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And I make references to things and I'm like, wait a minute, is that really still a thing? I don't know.
Yeah, I hear you. I thought that was one of the greatest... structures that there was in networking was Novell NDS. I was a big fan of that. So
I think that having a lab in pre-sales, whether it's relatively simplistic or something elaborate, is very, very, very important.
Agreed.
And I think that's, you know, to be very accurate in what you design and ultimately what gets built for your customer. So that's one thing. And then understanding some of that nuance.
Yeah.
But then, you know, I like how you talked about that you're bringing value to the customer. A lot of the value that I brought in pre-sales was like almost educational.
Right.
It might be the product, you know, like specifically how does this solution work? How does this platform work? And what problems does it solve? And that's true. But a lot of it was like, we really don't, you know, we need to refresh our data center and we want to move to a three-tier to a CLOS or CLO design. And we don't exactly understand how that works. You know, what kind of overlays do we use and why? And so I ended up, sometimes having like an hour-long conversation about what VXLAN is and why we need it and, you know, layer two adjacencies, layer three, what a VTEP is, all that stuff, and very educational. And so as new technologies comes out, I find that, you know, in technical marketing, but also when I was in pre-sales, listening to the podcasts, reading a specific set of blog posts that I find, you know, good blog posts, certain YouTube channels, you know, things like that. Really, really important. And then being part of various technical communities, you know, I attend various events on my own, apart from any, you know, anything with Kentik or any other VAR I was with, just go to this thing. And I found those to be like indispensable and turn that value right around and hand it over to customers. You know,
there you go. Yeah. That's a great way to do it.
Yeah. 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 So, Sean, it has been great to talk to you and get to know you a little bit more. Being relatively new at Kentik, we really haven't spoken much. So it was really cool that our first real deep conversation is recorded for the entire world to hear.
There you go.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I enjoyed this.
Yeah. Great, great. Yeah, and I do look forward to having you on again, especially after you get settled in and you have some really interesting war stories to share, which I would love to hear your perspective on as you're working with customers out in the field.
Sure, I'd love to.
Great, great. So for our audience, thanks so much for sticking with us today for this little bit of a different episode, which I thoroughly enjoyed and I hope you did too. So for now, thanks so much for listening. Bye-bye.